everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast. Kevin Gastola, joined by Rania Kalik. Hey, Rania.
Hey, Kevin.
And we're pleased to have back on the show Ben Norton, who is a journalist and editor for Multipolarista. How are you doing, Ben?
Great to be here. One of my favorite shows. Long time listener, so always glad to be back.
Yeah. And if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you first, because I saw that you were defending yourself from an attack from this think tank. And it just seems like with what we have happening in the world, and I was closely following what happened to musician Roger Waters last week. And then, like, you know, it's very clear that there's this great enforcement from within media, prestige media, and also within these like think tanks that are aligned with the national security state, that they are effectively trying to enforce this message discipline. And you know, we have so many examples, but I have your tweets here. So you're at the top here saying that there's more McCarthyite attacks on independent journalists by Western authoritarian regimes. This is coming from the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. I'll let you respond. This dialogue was pulling out one of your tweets about NATO, and you were pointing to the presence of Nazis in the Ukrainian army, correct? And they took offense to it, so you came back and you defended yourself. But this seems to be happening regularly to prominent and influential journalists who cover Ukraine.
Absolutely. First of all, we should understand what this group is. It's called the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. And if I can share my screen here, I just want to show who funds the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. It's just like a motley crew of some of the most evil organizations on earth. If you let me here, I mean, it's almost like a joke how many organizations fund this think tank. It is a neoconservative think tank that's a cutout of Western governments. So, I mean, let's start with the governments here. It's funded by like every single Western government. Australia, Denmark, Netherlands, the EU itself, Finland, Germany, Canada. The Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, for some reason, funds this group. Like London funds it. New Zealand, Norway, Canada again, Sweden, Britain, the UN Office of Counterterrorism, the US State Department, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, YouTube,
the GFCT Foundation. Is there. That's Facebook.
Ah, yeah. Is that another arm of Facebook? I mean, Facebook's
no,
that's, on there.
Those are the ones. Okay, so there's actually a story I want to bring up in a moment before we go too far. But GFCT, they run the dangerous persons list for Facebook. They'll put people on the terrorism watch list.
Yeah,
for,
I mean,
Facebook's social media.
You also have Omidyar, the Gates Foundation, the NDI, which is another arm of the U.S. government, the U.S. Institute for Peace, I mean, Open Society. And then you see, you know, Zionist groups like the Anti-Defamation League. This group, this organization, the McCain Institute, like every single neoconservative organization in Western government funds this think tank. It's a cutout. And then all they do is they just publish reports attacking anyone criticizing NATO and Western foreign policy. And they publish this ridiculous blog post that is completely infantile. I mean, it's written by like this young intern from Germany who probably, I think she just graduated college. Like, and in the article, they just say, they name people, like they name me, they name Danny Haifong, they name a few other people. They just like go through Twitter and find all these leftists who criticize NATO and US foreign policy and then accuse us of spreading Russian propaganda. They don't try to link us in any way to the Kremlin, which obviously is absurd and ridiculous, but they don't even try that. They just say that we're spreading Russian propaganda because we say that the U.S. is arming Nazis in Ukraine. And then the article goes to great lengths to try to downplay Azov. The article admits that Azov was founded by far-right extremists and white supremacists, and it admits that they use neo-Nazi symbols. But then it says, well, they're no longer Nazis. And they say, well, in Ukraine, far-right parties they haven't done well in elections. They don't win many seats in the parliament. But I've pointed that out many times in my analysis, in my videos, in my articles. The far-right doesn't have significant influence in the parliament in Ukraine. They have significant influence in the security services, in the National Guard, in the police, in the military. It's similar to the U.S., although the Republican Party is basically a fascist party. But how many police departments are full of far-right extremists in the U.S. I mean, it's similar. But then the person, by the way, who's the intern who wrote this, works in the German branch of this think tank. So this is a right-wing think tank funded by the German government with a German intern writing a propaganda piece defending Ukrainian Nazis. Nothing dangerous to see there. And then she goes further and says that Operation Gladio is a conspiracy theory. The historical fact that is undeniable that NATO in the first Cold War created this Operation Gladio of stay-behind networks in which not just NATO, but other specific Western governments, the U.S. government, the British government, the Italian government, they supported far-right extremists, former Nazi collaborators, and former fascists as part of these stay-behind networks who were involved in terrorist attacks. And by the way, some of the top officials in NATO were former Nazi German military officers. So this article at this neoconservative Western government-funded think tank says that all of that's a conspiracy theory. And if you say those historical facts, it's propaganda. And the irony is in that same article, this German intern posts a screenshot of a tweet that I quoted in my article about NATO sending weapons and training Nazis in Ukraine. And that tweet was from Nexta. Nexta is a Polish Western government-funded anti-Russian propaganda outlet that was deeply involved in the Belarus coup attempt. Nexta is like the exact opposite of RT. You couldn't have anything more opposite from RT. And Nexta is the source that I quoted in my article. Nexta is the source that reported, bragging, that NATO sent anti-tank weapons, missiles to Azov and was training Azov fighters and how to use them and posted photos of it. So that is basically undeniable proof from the most anti-Russian source possible admitting that NATO is arming Nazis in Ukraine. But you're not allowed to quote them because if you say that fact, you're spreading Russian propaganda.
Hello, everyone. Kevin Gostola here with the Unauthorized Disclosure Weekly Podcast, a show that I've been co-hosting with Rania Kalik since 2014. We recently moved from Patreon to our own site, thedissenter.org. It's a part of the independent journalism that I regularly do, and we're revamping the podcast, and we'd love to have your support. Each episode of the Unauthorized Disclosure Weekly Podcast focuses on issues or ideas that are often overlooked or entirely ignored by the prestige media. We embrace the long-form format in order to unpack unpopular opinions, embrace dissent, and welcome people onto our show that often have a difficult time getting a platform. So all you have to do to be a subscriber and get access to the full episodes of Unauthorized Disclosure, along with exclusive content from our show, is to go to thedissenter.org. Look at the bottom right, you'll see a subscribe button. You click on the subscribe button and you enter your email address and you can sign up to become an outside agitator and get the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast for $4 a month. Access to the episodes, the exclusive content, video and audio versions are made available each week to subscribers, and you get early access to the free show before it is available to everyone on Sundays. So go to thedissenter.org and support our show as we continue our independent podcast. Thank you. Rania, mute.
Sorry, I muted because there's a lawnmower. I hope you guys can't hear it. No. They're mowing the lawn.
Working class ambiance.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, what I was going to say before I so poorly muted myself was, so we actually talked about this a little bit when we had you on the Freedom Side, Ben, but I think that speaks to something that I had asked you about, which I'd like you to be able to speak to again on this show, which is the issue of the idea of disinformation being the new scare word, right? It's not really new. It's been being used, I think, since like Trump got elected in 2016. But people react to it like it's the new terrorism, right? It used to be that we were all constantly being attacked. I think we can all relate to this, being attacked for being terrorist sympathizers, being like stooges for terrorism, right? Terrorists, whatever. And now it's all, we're all disinformation agents. We're all stooges for Russian or Chinese or Nicaraguan or Venezuelan, you know, or Iranian disinformation. And it does, even though, like, I had mentioned before, like with terrorism, it made more sense that you could get a reaction out of people because you had something to point to. You could just point to 9/11 and it would bring up these fears or any other like attack that took place by Al-Qaeda anywhere. And it would put people in the mode of fear, where then like their critical thinking goes out the window and they'll believe anything you say associating someone with terrorism. With disinformation though, it's this like abstract concept that is obviously so manipulated and really doesn't mean anything other than inconvenient like facts that America doesn't like. But it does seem to have successfully worked in eliciting a similar kind of like, a similar kind of dampening of people's critical thinking. All you have to say is disinformation. This is where Ben is pushing disinformation, and a lot of people will just stop listening to what you're saying. So I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about your views on the use of the term disinformation, whether or not you think it's successful and why.
Well, I think it's successful, but for different reasons. I don't think it's necessarily successful in convincing a broader public not to listen to people like us. Fortunately, I mean, all of us, you know, we're journalists and we have a pretty big platform, and that platform continues to grow despite algorithmic suppression, despite all of that. So I think for a lot of the public, especially people who are skeptical of power and are looking for this kind of information, that's not going to influence them at all. But it is successful in another way, because what this is a cottage industry. It's successful in that it enriches certain people because they've created this entire industry built around combating disinformation. But more than that, it's also successful because it basically is this new tactic of silencing people who are dissidents, who criticize, you know, mainstream corporate media narratives. And it's a justification for removing them from social media and censoring them and blocking their PayPal accounts, right? So it's a tool that's used by the ruling class, if you will, by these Western governments to justify political actions that they want to carry out, but they can't find a way to carry out those political actions and justify them without seeming anti-democratic, right? So the point is that all these Western governments talk about freedom of speech and civil liberties, but they want to censor us. They really want to censor us. They want to censor all independent and critical media, and they need to find some kind of rationale and kind of excuse to do that. And disinformation is what they found. It's been a pretty convenient example. And especially with the election of Donald Trump, the ruling class in the U.S. was refusing in any way and has refused to engage in introspection, in self-criticism. The ruling class in the U.S. refuses to give even crumbs to working people. People in the U.S. continue to get poorer. Living standards are declining, especially now with inflation out of control. We see more and more homeless people. We see more and more precarious labor. So even though technically unemployment rates are not super high, a lot of that employment is precarious work. People like, you know, delivering food for apps or like driving Uber, like these horrible jobs. A lot of like the job, so-called recovery of jobs after the 2008 crisis were in those kinds of precarious jobs. And, you know, increasingly people in the U.S. and also other parts of Western Europe can see their lives getting worse. And the ruling class refuses in any way to provide, you know, better social programs, no healthcare in the U.S. Education is becoming more and more unaffordable, more expensive, with over $2 trillion of student loans. So they need to find a way to direct popular energy against some kind of scapegoat. The far right has immigrants, right? The Republicans blame immigrants, and the Democrats blame disinformation and, by extension, Russia and China, right? They blame the boogeymen of Russia and China. And they say that the reason Hillary Clinton lost is not because she was a warmonger and a neoliberal who ran a horrible center-right campaign, who basically on most political issues was pretty similar to Trump. No, it's not because of that. It's because of Russian disinformation. It's because the Kremlin posted some buff Bernie memes, right? And people loved Bernie not because he was proposing popular social democratic policies like healthcare and education. No, it was because people were confused by Russian disinformation. So if we just blame it on disinformation, we don't have to acknowledge any of the very real economic and social problems that are domestic, that are created inside the U.S. Instead, externalize everything. It's an extension of that same age-old tactic of just scapegoating your enemies. And especially now with the new Cold War, disinformation is always associated, you know, as I was saying in the interview I did with you and Eugene, they don't just say disinformation, they say Russian disinformation, Chinese disinformation. It's joined at the hip with the idea of foreign disinformation. They never talk about domestic disinformation like WMDs, like Russiagate, like the bounty story. They don't talk about, or Havana Syndrome. They never talk about domestic disinformation. It's always Russian and Chinese disinformation, which is a way of convincing, trying to delude people in the U.S. into thinking, well, the biggest problems facing our society are not from the billionaires destroying society from within. It's from the foreign powers from outside of our borders that we also, the ruling class, wants to destroy.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know that there's a lot for you to add to this, but I wanted to flag it because it caught my attention and it's in the realm of what we look at when social media companies are able to abuse their power. And we're talking about disinformation. I don't know if you saw this story, but there's actually a class action lawsuit that has been filed by adult entertainers against OnlyFans. And they're suing OnlyFans saying that this system that Meta, which used to be Facebook, so I'm just gonna call them Facebook because I think Meta is totally ridiculous. And so Facebook was using Instagram in such a way that gave OnlyFans an edge over any other competitors that were posting or using the Instagram platform. And one thing they were doing where they were giving these like hash, labels to certain people so that they were grouped as if they were terrorists on the platform. So like they were actually making it so that they could downgrade you and decrease traffic through the algorithm. And that's sort of what we go through as journalists, like what we face, what we expect is that people are like us that are outside the narratives are going to be downgraded so that our traffic doesn't remain high. But I don't know. This really caught my attention because it just seems so like obvious that this is an abuse that can happen. And one of the secondary issues to having these mechanisms in these social media platforms that are free from any kind of oversight, you know, these aren't public utilities. There's nothing we can do. So these companies with so much influence are able to do this to people and ruin your ability to do work and bring in revenue. And that's, you know, that's also what we face as like journalists, like the ability to suppress our revenue streams. I don't know if anybody has anything to say to that. There's more substantive discussions to come in Unauthorized Disclosure, but it's just something I wanted to bring up that caught my attention. And I think Ben might be muted.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry, I was muted.
Let's make it a thing this show. Everybody, now you have to do it, Kevin. I've done it, Ben has done it, you're next. There we go, he's me. That's cute, Kevin, very cute. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, there was a bit of a teaser there. I wonder what episodes are coming in the future at Unauthorized Disclosure. But no, I mean, I don't really know this case. I don't know if I entirely understood. I guess what, maybe I'm being a little blunt here. I guess what you're saying is that like Instagram did this decision where like they're trying to like repress people who like post like softcore porn or whatever on their platform, I guess.
Okay, so.
But they list them as terrorists?
No, what I'm saying is that OnlyFans was worried about other, let's say, websites that would use the Instagram platform or whatever. And so one thing they were able to do was get Meta. Here, I'll just read from the class action lawsuit. Yeah, I have it in front of me. So this GIFCT that I was describing, this is the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism. They have this hash database. It was created in 2016 by Facebook. It's a shared industry database. It's supposed to track violent terrorist content and help people flag it. It has Tumblr, WordPress, JustPaste, Airbnb, MailChimp, Discord, Instagram, WhatsApp, Pinterest, Amazon, Dropbox, Mega, and LinkedIn are all part of this database. the allegation here from the people who are suing, and they are suing Meta, the allegation here is that they used this classifier to blacklist adult entertainers who were competitors of OnlyFans people in order to...
I get it.
In order to suppress them and make it easier. So there's a capitalist reason for why this is happening.
I mean, Instagram...
They're abusing... But just to finish my thing, they're abusing a classification filter that we would recognize as, you know, already there that could be abused in order to suppress, like, discussions, which we, you know, like, I know, Rania, you were contacted by The Intercept for an article about the dangerous persons list that Facebook has because they took down your photo of the Soleimani billboard.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just wanted to say that, I mean, Instagram is already extremely similar to OnlyFans anyway. Like, so, I mean, half of like Instagram models are just doing something very similar. So they're it's just this market competition. I mean, look, I don't have too many profound thoughts on this other than the more these big tech companies can be sued, the better. I'm down for any lawsuit against them. Screw them all. They're all evil, especially Instagram. It belongs to Facebook or Meta or whatever. Sue them. Good. I mean, the more that they can be sued, the more people can try to exercise some kind of control and try to push back at their attempt to just monopolize everything and control our lives and weaponize these algorithms. Cool. I'm down for it. And I think that could help journalists because obviously if you know, these, you know, actresses or whatever you want to call them, if they're like hurt by the algorithm, cool. If they want to sue them, go for it because journalists are hurt by the algorithm. And that's something we have in common, I guess, in this case. They're not like far right fascists. This is not, I'm not saying that, journalists allying with porn stars against censorship is not like the left allying with fascists against the FBI, which I guess we'll talk about later. That's not; those are not the same things.
No.
Well, I just see that they're putting people on a terrorism watch list who shouldn't be on it, and I have big red alarms that go off. So, so to use your expertise, Ben, we did want to ask you this before we got to the big Trump FBI news. So I saw that you retweeted this from this ambassador who, you know, has been visiting or been addressing countries in the African continent and telling them what they can and can't do as far as Russian trade. I know, Rania, you have thoughts about this as well, and you covered this on Breakthrough News. But I guess specifically where we're at right now and, you know, just flat out lying about what they are telling African countries. Here we've got the tweet. I'll read it. So for people who might just only be listening, Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield said, "Let me set the record straight about a regular piece of disinformation," again, which is saying, using that word is like something I disagree with. It's not really disinformation. It's just you don't agree with it. So she says, "America's sanctions do not apply to Russian food and fertilizer exports, period," which I don't think is true, but in any case, I'll take that down and let you respond to...
Well, I just want to say one thing real quick before Ben responds is the thing is, technically, this is what the U.S. always says. Technically, yes, fertilizer and food are Russian food are not sanctioned. But once you sanction a country's central bank and everything associated with that country, you basically are sanctioning. You're basically telling everyone, do not do business with this country. It is a well-known fact that once you sanction a country the way Russia's been sanctioned, you are essentially sanctioning everything else, whether it's food, whether it's humanitarian goods, it does not matter. So what she's saying is full of shit, but please go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, well, and what's funny is if you go to that tweet, there are actually African journalists from mainstream outlets responding to her and asking questions. Of course, she ignores all of them. And they're pointing out, for instance, okay, you say it doesn't apply to food, to agriculture and fertilizer, but it does apply to oil and gas, and you need oil and gas to transport the food and fertilizer. So it actually does hurt the food and fertilizer exports. So, I mean, obviously, this is what the U.S. always says. The U.S. always says it sanctions on Iran, on Cuba, on Venezuela, on all these countries. It doesn't impact food, fertilizer, other kinds of things, but it's a lie. And all you have to do is read what these sadistic you know, U.S. government operatives write in their own books, like Richard Nephew. Richard Nephew worked in the Obama administration. He was brought back in the State Department for Biden, and he's the Iran envoy overseeing sanctions. And he wrote this book, The Art of Sanctions, in which he boasts that the sanctions on Iran tripled or many times over the price of chicken and led to, you know, out of control food costs in Iran, and boasted that that was hurting the Iranian economy. So all you have to do is read what they themselves write in their books. This is simply PR. This is what the U.S. always says, that food and medicine are exempt, but that's not how these things work. And by the way, just really briefly, while we're on the subject of the U.S. ignoring African reporters, I mean, this is a continuous pattern, and it shows the extremely patronizing attitude toward Africans. I don't know if you saw, if you let me share my screen here. Did you all see this video that Kausachun posted?
Yeah, but let's...
Kausachun News?
I did, but we should play it because it's amazing. Yeah.
So this is Karine Jean-Pierre, who's the new Biden White House press secretary, who took over after Jen Psaki got a job over at MSNBC, revolving door there. So this is incredible because you see they're talking about AFRICOM and Sub-Saharan Africa, and you see that, you know, this new Biden press secretary, who happens to be Black American, she's ignoring all of the African journalists and refusing to respond to their questions and only responding to questions from U.S. journalists. So here, I'll just play this.
While it's playing, I'm just going to use the bathroom real quick. As I've heard it before,
about what happened yesterday.
Afterwards, between the Justice Department and President Biden.
One question for Africa, Karine.
I'm going to come back, guys.
Thank you. Why do we always have to beg for questions? Africans deserve questions as well, Karine. Come on.
What is the latest?
So they said Africans deserve questions as well. One question for Africa, and just she just ignores them.
Well, Africa's a country, so they only get one question.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll take a couple more questions. Okay, I'm gonna take.
And she says one for Africa, one for Africa.
Guys, go ahead. Okay, give me a second. Go ahead.
And even when you give questions to Simon, it's because he forced. We don't need to force for question. We also deserve to have a question.
I will get
against African reporters. Okay.
She said, "Do you have something against African reporters?" I mean, it shows how quite literally skin deep the Biden administration's commitment to diversity is, because it's only visual diversity. It's not ideological diversity. They don't care what actual people in the Global South have to say about these issues.
Right, right. It's all above the equator diversity. It's just the diversity.
She's such a bad press secretary. Like, she's just terrible. Like, she really is bad at her job. I almost feel bad for her when I see her, like, treated like that, because she just doesn't know how to respond properly. But anyway.
I'd say Jen Psaki, as evil as she is, she was very good because she could, like, she would always portray her. She had this martyrdom complex and was very good at portraying herself, like, as a victim. Like, right. if a male journalist asked a mildly critical question, she would imply it was, like, sexist or something, which is, like, all this passive aggressive. That's the Biden administration loves that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the only argument they have is, well, I'm a woman, so I don't have to answer that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this. Let's here, I got it. From last week.
They made a big fuss because I'm speaker, I guess. I don't know if that was a reason or an excuse, because they didn't say anything when the men came.
The Chinese are upset with Nancy Pelosi, not because Taiwan is controversial for them. It's because of the issue of her being a woman. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Yeah, see, that, and that's what you're talking about. That's what Jen Psaki could turn on. She was really good at that.
Well, but this also shows again that, you know, the Biden administration sent Linda Thomas Greenfield over to Africa to tell Africans, you know, a Black woman again, using like Black women as like human shields for empire. And she goes to Africa and tells Africans they can't buy anything except food and fertilizer from Russia, as if they're like colonized.
Yeah.
Like what? Well, this is a colonialist attitude.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy that like they intentionally, God, my things out of focus. Anyways, they intentionally will send this like an African-American woman to tell Africa. They also, they had Gregory Meeks, Representative Gregory Meeks. He sponsored this bill to basically, it hasn't gone anywhere so far, which I'm surprised by, but it's this bill in Congress to basically punish African countries or officials who are helping Russia's malign influence in the region, whatever that means. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to where everybody who listens to the show will be, their heads will be swimming in all this Trump FBI raid news from the past week. And specifically, I'd like to engage with the left reaction because I find it to be quite maddening, and I don't have any problem saying it because I come to this story different than I think both of you, because I have experience covering the scandalous behavior of the Justice Department in targeting whistleblowers who were accused of mishandling classified information and disingenuously targeted because they leaked information to the press and they exposed certain things. And the people who I've defended have been people who exposed NSA surveillance, NSA contract boondoggles pushed by Michael Hayden, people who spoke against torture, people who exposed the drone program. You're like, right now, Daniel Hale is in a communications management unit in the state where I live in Illinois, rotting because he exposed the drone program.
Well, Terry Albury himself is from the FBI, yeah, who exposed racism and discrimination.
Yeah, the informant recruitment practices that are racial profiling and the targeting of communities, the Somali community up in Minneapolis. Yeah. That and there are also like low-level people who get targeted for taking classified information and keeping it in their homes, right, or having it in their vehicles that are like CIA or NSA contractors, and they get the Espionage Act thrown at them. They don't get a chance to negotiate with Justice Department prosecutors for slaps on the wrist so that they just have like a misdemeanor or like, I mean, a lot of people probably don't know, given what we've been through with Obama and Trump, that there are multiple laws that can be used to criminalize somebody who takes classified information. It's not just the Espionage Act. If you're rich and powerful, you will find innocent statute that just says, oh, you violated a rule for public government employees, and we'll just slap your wrist and you can move on with your life. And so that's what Trump could have happened to him. But anyways, so like, I care about this because, like, not because I want to defend the FBI and their search and say that they're a great, valiant institution that we should all revere, but like, I care about this because of what has happened to other people who are abused and mistreated by the Justice Department. But I also am interested in whatever we're going to learn about this. And I'm going to put some tweets on and then we'll get both of your comments. But I found this, well, I didn't find this, but there was a progressive journalist who found this whistleblower report from 2019 that suggests very clearly that this is likely connected to Saudi Arabia and the fact that Donald Trump took nuclear documents and has them in his possession because it could benefit him in his business deals. And I won't put it up on screen. There's really nothing to see. But there was a whistleblower report from 2019 that said whistleblowers raised grave concerns with the Trump administration's efforts to transfer sensitive nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia. This was in February of 2019. And then I'm just going to read this to you because I think this is relevant. This removes it from just being an innocent, stupid issue of did you respect the classified markings on a document to actually having geopolitical implications for us that'll matter to humanity, if this is true. So within the United States, the report said strong private commercial interests have been pressing aggressively for the transfer of highly sensitive nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia, a potential risk to U.S. national security absent adequate safeguards. These commercial entities stand to reap billions of dollars through contracts associated with constructing and operating nuclear facilities in Saudi Arabia, and apparently have been in close and repeated contact with President Trump and his administration to the present day. However, experts worry that transferring sensitive U.S. nuclear technology could allow Saudi Arabia to produce nuclear weapons that contribute to the proliferation of nuclear arms throughout an already unstable Middle East, because the U.S. made it unstable. But anyways, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman conceded this point in 2018, proclaiming, without a doubt, if Iran develops a nuclear bomb, we will follow suit as soon as possible. So, you know, I'm just thinking of what we know about what Jared Kushner and people around the family and Trump and the connections with people who are business leaders in Saudi Arabia, the people who have visited Mar-a-Lago, and what this information might be that they have taken that is going to be factored into advancing the Trump empire.
So I just want to add just a little small thing to what Kevin just said, and that is the fact that, like, look, no one here supports the FBI. That said, like, I think Ben's going to speak more to this because you actually made a really good point on Twitter, and I'm glad you did, about this. But obviously, the anti-FBI sentiment right now among the MAGA right is very disingenuous. I mean, these are the same people who love the police more than anybody else and want to use the police to suppress the left and anybody they don't like because they're fascists. That said, also, the FBI is a bit of a fascistic institution. But in this case, anyone suggesting its overreach is full of shit, because it's actually shocking that it took them this long to search his house, because apparently they've been politely asking him to return these classified documents like since he left office, and he just was like never responded or said no. So the fact that then they died, it wasn't even really a raid. Like, it's like it wasn't a raid in the sense of like the SWAT team, from what I understand. They were delivering a search warrant that was like legitimate. And at the end of the day, the left isn't opposed to the FBI because the left is opposed to the state, which I think people are mistaking right now on the internet, on Twitter, especially, where people are making very stupid comments.
But, I've got some of them for after Ben gets in.
But the left is opposed to the FBI because the FBI is basically a fascistic institution that the capitalist state has used and still uses against the left, to spy on the left. They've assassinated leftist leaders in the past. They've been involved in all kinds of bullshit against the left, sabotaging, and again, literally killing. Like, the FBI participated in assassinating Fred Hampton. That's just one time that they did that. There's multiple other things the FBI is involved with, all kinds of violence, not just in the past, but continuing into the present. So anyways, that's all I wanted to say, but I'm sure Ben has got a lot to add. So please, let it rip, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, just a few days before this incident with Trump and the FBI, the FBI raided the African People's Socialist Party, which is an example of a blatant attack on the left. I mean, so the FBI is in no way a friend of the left, but I think there's two different issues we have to kind of divide because they're separate
Ben,
political issues.
Since you mentioned them, I have a video of Omari Yeshitela. If you don't mind if I cut in on you, I'm gonna play what he said on Democracy Now! When he was asked about the raid, because if anybody's confused about where we stand, I think I'm like 99.9% in agreement with everything that Omari Yeshitela had to say. And I think it's worth just playing this so people don't get confused as we critique colleagues on the left and what they've expressed during the past week. So I'm going to put this up here. This is really a good statement from him.
Going off and even those people climbing the walls of the Capitol. And the fact is that the FBI is being used as political instruments, and certainly that's happened with us. And I can't speak to the former president of the United States except to say that there's an obvious contest that's happening between different sectors of the colonial ruling class in this country, and they would, if they could, lump us into their beef, their struggle. But we are fighting for the liberation of Black people, the unification, liberation of Africa, and we ain't going to stop.
Omari Yeshitela, we want to thank you.
Fairly simple.
Yeah, and that's another point I was going to make, which, I mean, the people like calling for the left, which I'll talk about in a second, because I even this whole idea of like the left needs to be interrogated, but like calling for the left to like ally with Trumpists is extremely stupid on so many levels. But also, if your enemies are fighting, let your enemies fight. Don't interrupt the fight between your enemies. How many historical times can we learn that lesson? But even aside from that, I think there's two different issues we have to divide here. One is the issue of the case against Trump. And as all of us, you know, as we don't need to, I don't think we need to display to the audience, we're all extremely against the FBI, the U.S. police state. You know, we spent so much time opposing it. There are legitimate concerns about what Trump has been doing. Trump has seen himself as above the law for many decades, but especially since he became president. This guy, he's, you know, l'état c'est moi, I'm the state. That's how he governed. Mm-hmm. And he does see himself as above the law. Hillary Clinton, similarly. And, you know, if it was justified to investigate Hillary Clinton for her very clear illegal mishandling of classified documents, then I think Trump doubly so. Okay, so that's a separate issue. Then there's the issue of the political question. If the so-called left, which I'll talk about what that means in a second, should ally with literal fascists because they claim right now, this week, this minute, they claim to be against the FBI. Obviously, we know that's not genuine. That's ridiculous. We have to talk about what the left is meant by this. So first of all, when we say the left, there's a laziness when people say the left that I really dislike. When people say the left, they often, and then you say, what do you mean? And they talk about like YouTubers.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not the left. They're like, what's the left? It's like Jimmy Dore. It's like, no, where is Jimmy Dore's like political party?
Yeah.
Like where? No, I mean, the left, it consists of organization. I mean, if you believe in actual left-wing politics, you have to believe that collective action needs to be taken through organizational power. So we're talking about organizations, DSA, PSL, Workers World, Frizzo, you know, other progressive organizations. Like, that's the left. It's not a bunch of like weirdos with a YouTube channel, like these so-called patriotic socialists.
It's not us either, yeah. By the way. Like, we're leftists. We are not the left.
Yeah, like this guy. And then this gets to this whole nonsense of like these patriotic socialists who have a lot in common with the National Socialists, I'll say, and how little socialist they are and how much patriotic and nationalist they are. But I mean, these people are, first of all, complete fringe. They have no influence outside of like social media. And I say this as someone who is a journalist, but like I don't claim to be a political leader. I don't claim to like, you know, have a movement of people behind me. Like these so-called patriotic socialists who always bend over backward to do lesser evilism in defense of Republicans. Mm-hmm. What is the point of that? Like all they're doing is they're inverting the old political problem of the social Democrats who claim to be socialists but always bend over backward to defend the Democrats as the lesser evil. They're doing the same thing but saying Republicans are the lesser evil. Mm-hmm. And they're calling for allying with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is one of the most explicitly fascist politicians in the U.S. right now. Let's not forget, this is someone who honored and admires J. Edgar Hoover, the founder of the FBI, a complete McCarthyite and racist who oversaw COINTELPRO, assassination of black revolutionaries like Fred Hampton, oversaw, you know, the surveillance and spying on of MLK. I mean, she was praising the FBI when it was cracking down under Trump on Black Lives Matter protests.
Right.
She called Black Lives Matter the biggest threat to the United States. Mm-hmm. This was a little over a year ago. She and all these Trump Republicans were encouraging the police to brutalize protesters. And now they're calling for, they're not going to actually abolish the FBI. What is their tangible action plan for abolishing the FBI? First of all, they don't even have the votes if they wanted to, which they clearly don't want to. What's much more likely is they take power, the Republicans take power again, and they strengthen the FBI. I mean, this is a ridiculous...
She actually has said that, by the way, that it's just that Republicans need to take back power.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That they can, like, make it not a political weapon anymore. Yeah.
So, well, this is a complex political debate that goes back many decades, right? It goes back hundreds of years, about when you should form political short-term alliances with your enemies, with, you know, far right, right wing libertarian people, right? So here's another example of this would be like the anti-war movement. Like, I think libertarians on economic issues are really dumb. I think their economic worldview is insane. It's they live on another planet. But there are a lot of short-term coalitions between the left and libertarians against war, against the war in Yemen, the war in Libya. That makes sense because one—
Syria, actually. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to cut you off too much, but when I still had Jane Hampshire at Fire Dog Lake, we actually whipped the House and stopped them from passing a resolution in support of the Syrian conflict that would have given Obama what he wanted to escalate. I mean, there was U.S. involvement, but he wanted far more.
Yeah, well, that's an example of a clear, concrete political action based on votes. And the left doesn't have a party in Congress. It has
no.
That is a progressive caucus, but
if Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to put forth a bill in Congress to abolish the FBI, I will 100% support that specific policy goal, and will do whatever I can to help get it passed.
Yep. Yeah, but again, but getting back to the issue of like libertarians and like the left, so in that context, it makes sense because one. Libertarians, despite my many disagreements with them and other issues, they have shown a consistency over many decades of opposition to war. Okay, this isn't something that has started a week ago and is going to end in 8 days. The fake right-wing opposition to the FBI. They've showed consistency over a long period of time, which means that if you form a short-term alliance with them, you're not going to get burnt because you know they've shown consistency on that issue. Furthermore, there's another major issue of this, which is that Marjorie Taylor Greene has made it very clear that her main enemy is the left. She campaigned on a slogan saying end socialism. She did campaign videos shooting the word socialism right. with a machine gun. So the other part of this is that if you form a temporary political coalition with someone, you do it with someone who is a lesser enemy, not a bigger enemy, right? Like libertarians, I think they're dumb on a lot of issues, but I don't think they're as bad as fascists.
Yeah.
Fascists are the number one enemy. And obviously I don't like liberals either, but if I have to choose between liberals and fascists, I'll choose the liberals. You don't ally with the people who are even worse enemies. That's not how political coalitions work. So the idea of the left allying with the far right against the center is extremely stupid. And by the way, the left has very little power. The far right in the U.S. has a lot of power. So if you form a coalition with someone and then your coalition wins, they will turn against you and you have no power. So the far right's going
to
win.
It's like the people who like wanted to.
For the full episode, go to thedissenter.org.